Tom Heck with the Manager as Coach Boot Camp. Today is August 11th, 2008. We're also going to be sharing this recording with the wider audience through TeachMeTeamwork.com, which is 36,000 some hundred subscribers from 103 countries. And so today is a special call. Our guest speaker today is David Allen, who is, many of you know, is the author of Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. David is considered by many to be the world's leading authority on productivity improvement. He is having logged thousands of hours working with individual executives and senior professionals. David has developed what I would consider a revolutionary, unique, and highly practical system for improving personal and organizational productivity. To give you an idea of the impact of his work, in the last 20 years, he's developed and delivered productivity improvement programs to over a half a million professionals in hundreds of organizations worldwide, including many Fortune 500 corporations such as Microsoft, Lockheed, Amgen, L.L. Bean, the New York Life, and the U.S. government agencies like the U.S. Navy and the World Bank. You can find, and we'll be mentioning this at other times, but his web address is davidco.com, davidco.com. David, welcome to the call.
Delighted to be here, Tom. Thanks.
Well, today we're going to be talking about productivity, and I'd like to set the stage. we're in week eight of a 10-week management leadership program, and one of the things that is required through this program is the completion of progress notes each week. And one of the things that has come up over and over again is how many people are reporting that they have no time, they're in overwhelm. And so we've got participants in this program from FedEx and the Army, someone who's a head of school at a private school. And so across the board, we've got all these different people. And almost all of them will report that they have no time. So I'm going to guess that some people are going to say, my job, and I kind of want to set the stage with this, my job is so demanding that I don't care what kind of productivity improvement you can teach me, it's not going to make that big of a difference. It's going to be a drop in the bucket. So I'm curious if you can share with our listeners, how bad have you seen it? And then on the flip side, how good can it get once you start applying this these technologies?
Let's see, how bad, you know, it's really not about volume, Tom. That's the issue.
Okay.
If you mislabel the problem, you'll never come up with a solution. First of all, the mislabeled problem was time management. You can't manage time anyway, so no wonder nobody ever came up with a solution, because it's a misnamed problem. The real problem is, how comfortable are you that the one thing you're doing is the thing you need to do?
Say that one more time.
The real issue is the one thing you're doing, you can only do one thing at a time. I mean, you can sort of multitask, like pump blood and drive a car and other things while you're doing other things, but in terms of conscious attention focus,
yes,
you can only focus on one thing at a time.
Okay.
So ultimately, I'm sorry, it reduces down to the very simple, you know, half empty, half full. You either feel great about what you're doing or crappy about all the stuff you're not doing.
And okay.
So if you say, how bad does it get? Well, it's like, how bad can people feel about what they're not doing?
Well, I would imagine that you have seen people who are in complete overwhelm and with their job and their performance, and it's hurting their team.
Sure.
And so
it's pretty universal, actually. It's a fairly endemic problem that most people have a vague sense that there's stuff they probably ought to be doing. They're just not sure they're not sure exactly what it is. They have a sense that what they're being asked to do in the very moment is not exactly probably what they ought to be doing. They just don't know what it all is. Oh, damn.
Mm-hmm.
So you say, how bad can it get? Well, we just ran across somebody with 27,000 emails in.
Oh my gosh.
That's the biggest we've seen. You know, the guy just kept everything in there. He didn't, you know, he either had no clue or no interest in moving it, you know, once he looked at it. Now, is that bad or good? Well, it depends on what he feels about it. So it's really, you know, if that's what you want to do, is I want to keep emails that I have, you know, no attention on and that are referenced and that, you know, represent all these other things in one spot, and that actually doesn't bother you or distract you, like, fine. So it's not a matter of backlog that's the issue. It's how bad do you feel about the size of your backlog. That's the issue.
So when you and how fast can someone turn this around? I mean, when you've seen people who do feel bad, do feel an overwhelm and say or are reporting that they just don't know how they're going to get things done, how fast can things turn around for them?
Well, I hate to do it, but I'm going to give you a subtle answer to this.
Okay.
It depends on how soon you recognize there's light at the end of the tunnel.
Hmm.
In other words, once you kind of get the GTD, the getting things done game, you actually don't even have to empty your in-basket. You can turn and walk and have nothing on your mind because you know you could. It's the sense that there is no solution, that there, you know, it's kind of, you know, that's where most people's anxiety comes from, is this sense that there's an infinite negative future out in front of me.
Right.
And I don't know how to get to the end of it. It just seems to be getting worse. You know, I don't see any light. So how fast can you sort of recognize that there actually is a way to get there? Let me give you a little more practical. So that's just, well, you know, it takes a couple of hours to kind of get what the GTD game is. And I've had people just walk out of a seminar or finish reading the book and go, wow, you know, life is a whole lot better right now because I know I could. Whether or not I'm, you know, I actually go do what all that stuff is about, keep everything out of your head, you know, make action decisions of any actionable stuff, keep a total inventory out available all the time so you can renegotiate with yourself minute to minute. How much of that you actually feel like doing, it's up to your lazy factor and how important it is to you to actually have truly nothing on your mind. So those become the issues in terms of behavior change. If you say, well, how long does it take to kind of do that once you kind of get the game?
Mm-hmm.
It takes a couple of, you know, cause a couple of hours to kind of understand it. It takes a couple of days to start to groove some patterns and set up some structures, a couple of weeks to kind of start to get some of them in a habit, you know, a couple of months to get some of these things on cruise control, and a couple of years, if you're really, really good, to change some of these behaviors if you didn't have them to begin with.
So once someone has gone down this path, and we're going to, I'd like you to kind of share an overview in a moment of the GTD, you say it so quickly, approach.
Rolled on my tongue after all these years.
What is life when people come back after those months or a couple years even? What's the most common thing that you hear people reporting?
Boy, you know, it's a whole set of things in terms of the positive game, mm-hmm. in terms of their positive experience.
Right.
A sense of relaxed control, a sense of high levels of efficiency in terms of how fast they can process through stuff and get it clear. An efficient, you know, flexible system of organization that you don't have to, you know, overstructure yourself, but it still holds water no matter how much your job changes or how much, you know, what you're doing. You know, there's an infinite number of things. I mean, the real value on the back end of this is the creative brain space that this allows. You know, most people would give significant body parts to have a couple of hours a week to actually be thinking and to be free to focus on what they really feel like they either want to or really hard to do. And most people are just so wrapped around the axle about just the inefficiencies of all the other stuff they have to deal with that there's just no bandwidth, you know, to A, have that creative sort of think time, and B, trust that if you come up with some creative stuff in that creative think time that you have an execution process that'll seamlessly get it done. So those are, you know, that's a mouthful, but that's,
yeah.
that's kind of, you know, daily we get emails from people saying that's pretty much, you know, what they've experienced.
So I think it's interesting that you associate that creativity surfaces. And from a leadership standpoint, because everybody on this call is leading a group of people, they're all in some kind of management role, what is the link between becoming more creative or having more creative space and their ability to be a stronger leader, in your estimation?
Well, I think, you know, leadership requires that you have a horizon that you can tap to that will keep perspective for yourself and other people. If people have a subliminal sense that you're out of control, you're not going to lead them. You know, I don't want to, you know, they're not going to be following you. They're going to go, that guy's running off the end of the pier. You know, so your sense of what is it that gives you a sense of both control and perspective? And that's what's really key. If somebody's walking around and say, that person absolutely knows where to put their focus, what conversation with whom to have and when, at both micro levels and at macro levels at the right time. They have a high degree of flexibility to be able to change that, not be too overstructured, so that they can respond spontaneously in the moment to the needs of the moment. And they have a sense of, you know, that essentially their world is intact, you know, that they're not letting stuff fall through the cracks, they're keeping agreements, you know, and it's a smooth sailing ship. It's like, if you're not there, what is it? And we all fall off of that. I mean, if you didn't fall off of that sort of sense of control and perspective at least half a dozen times a day, you're probably stale. So it's not a matter of constantly always being in control and constantly having the right focus. It's a matter of whether you know whether or how to get it if you've lost it, or if you fall off of it, how you get back to it real quick.
So before we head into the an overview of getting things done, and by the way, we're going to be opening up for the people who are listening. We're going to be opening up here for an opportunity for you to ask David questions about this process. But can you help us understand the link between becoming more productive and the creativity piece, and you've touched on that, and the being flexible and having control and perspective. How does all of this relate to our responsibility as a leader? In other words, I kind of get the sense from reading your material that there's more to getting things done than what we're doing for ourselves, but that we're able to impact more people in a positive way.
Well, you know, it really comes back to, you know, do you have the ability to let go and lift up in terms of your horizon? In other words, are you taking the time to step back and reflect, walk around and think of nothing? In other words, do you have the ability to be able to, because I think that's where a lot of the creativity, you know, the world is so noisy that, you know, being reflective or contemplative is not about quieting your mind so much as it is quieting the world so your mind can actually hear itself think. You know, and I think that's a huge, huge factor. Like, what's the ability for you to be able to unhook from the noise and the randomness and the ramble of the world out here at key moments and step back and think and reflect? That's the biggest thing I hear from leaders and top-level executives is they don't have think time. And that think time is just critical. That, you know, and I'm not talking about stare at your navel, figure out your life purpose. Yeah, that's good stuff. But, you know, get that handle before you die, you'll be cool. I'm talking about step back at least once a week and take 2 hours. You know, what we call the weekly review, I think, is the most critical kind of reflection process where you step back and take a look at your 65 or 93 projects and what's going on with them and kind of catch up, sort of bring up the rear guard, if you will. And at the same time, feel like I can put all that to bed. Now let me just think about nothing and then see what shows up and then start to pay attention to the subtler levels of what actually have your attention.
So this being able to actually look for space in your life and at work where you're doing or thinking about nothing, that seems to be I would suspect that some people would say, well, are they paying me to have nothing going on in my life?
Yeah. They're going to have to get through that one.
Yeah.
It's the busy trap, trust me. It is so seductive, and the more senior you are, the more likely you're to get hooked into the busy trap. The busy trap basically says, look, give me something that looks like what I think I'm being paid to do, that at least feels constructive and productive, and, you know, that could be anything from snacking on your email, you know, to, okay, let me go look busy and, you know, find something that's sitting around me that I can feel like I'm being productive at.
Right.
Come on, there's nothing really wrong with that. I mean, that sometimes that's the best thing to do if your brain is kind of toast. You've been on two major conference calls and your brain is sort of fried. That's the time to sit down and, sure, snack on email, clean up a bunch of stuff, you know, pay bills, process receipts and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But a lot of people then just get hooked into those kind of activities because the ability to be able to sit back and think, it's challenging enough to think. I mean, thinking takes time and energy. Ask any writer, by the way, you know, how it takes a lot of energy to think. And so you have to be able to clear the deck enough so that you can then hold the world and bracket it away to be able to think and focus.
I think that this, what you're talking about sounds like what people perceive the identity of a leader to be, that a leader is, by definition, busy. If you walk into a leader's office, they'll be doing something.
Yeah. And but, you know, come on, everybody should just pull out the dust off the one-minute manager out of their old archive, you know.
Right.
And, you know, Ken had it. You know, he as simple as that little metaphor was, mm-hmm. you know, you walk in, they got time for you.
Right, you know? Right. Well, so what I'd like you to do is share with us some of the most important pieces because about getting things done, because there are people who are on the call who are familiar with your work but haven't read your book, and then there's others who are very familiar. So can you give us just a brief synopsis?
Sure. Well, there's really two aspects of it. There's the control piece and the perspective piece. And you kind of need to get control first because it's kind of hard to – in other words, if your ship is sinking, you don't care where your ship is pointed. Hmm. You know, you need to patch up the cracks. So the control piece are really the five stages of how you manage the flow of work and stuff. And, you know, I can drill into that little detail. And then there's perspective. Once you get control, then you say, well, now what? What should I be focused on now that I have a clear focus? And that's where you have the horizons to focus. And there's six horizons of focus. But the control piece is probably the most popular, and that's probably the biggest pain factor out there. Called, wow, I got 150 emails coming at me every day, mm-hmm. or 300 emails a day. I got stuff, you know, I got a big, huge amount of backlog. I got a bunch of commitments I haven't kept track of. So that's the first piece. And it's basically, you know, three basic stages. You need to collect stuff, you need to then make decisions about what it means, and then you need to organize the results of that into some appropriate place. And then
okay.
you need to, of course, review and work with that so that essentially your mind stays out in the extended form as opposed to back in your head. So the whole idea is sort of distributed cognition, as the new cognitive sciences are calling it. Basically, get it out of your head. So the first thing you have to do is collect all the things that you have attention on. Then you have to get more discreet about what exactly they mean and what exactly you're going to do about them. And then you need to organize the results of that thinking into some appropriate way so that you can keep placeholders for the open loops, you know, in some objective way, not in your head.
Mm-hmm.
And then you need to review and engage with that appropriately. So when you get to a phone, you can see the 16 phone calls that you need to make that move things forward at phones. And then, then you have to bring in the perspective piece. Yeah, and then I have all the priority decisions about what do I now do out of all that. But that's a little bit of a different discussion.
Okay, maybe we should I'd like to open up for a couple questions here about what we've covered so far. And I do want to mention one thing, though, before we do that, and that is that you said your head's for having ideas, not holding them.
Right.
I remember reading that, and I love that. So, and if you hold too many ideas, then it's harder to have the ideas.
Right.
So, I'd like to take this moment for our listeners here. If you would, hit your *6 key to unmute yourself. And if you've got a question for David about what we've covered so far, or maybe something that we haven't, we can use this as an opportunity to kind of get a direction for where we're going. Who's got a question? Oh, let's see here.
Have we been brilliantly thorough, Tom, or baffled everybody to death?
Well, I will tell you this, is that I have found an enormous amount of information about getting things done on the web, and and I know you've just come out with another book. So I read somewhere that if you hang around David Allen long enough, what you'll hear is it's all in the book. It's all in getting things done. So, I think what I'd like to do, and it looks like someone has unmuted, is get into the application. What some people might say is the real world. Yeah, but here's my situation. So mm-hmm. Who's got a question?
This is Ethan.
Yes, Ethan.
Great segue. Because my question has to do with the real world. First of all, David, let me say that I am a big fan of your book. I read it. I introduced my last boss to it where I worked before. We bought 15 copies and started doing little in-services on it.
Great.
And I just introduced my boss to it here, and now they're wanting to do the same thing. So it's a great concept. I really like the way it works. And my personal consulting business is on performance improvement. So I utilize your ideas quite a bit. Time in with some of my own stuff, and I really enjoy it. My question, first, whenever I follow your processes, it really does work. But like everyone else, I catch myself sometimes running down a rabbit trail that I didn't need to start on in the first place.
Me too.
How do I keep to your basic categories and manage to organize that list in a transportable format, you know, your basic seven categories that you talk about in your book, which is what I was talking about the good segue for?
Well, Ethan, if what you're talking about is, you know, how do I have access to all of that and keep it current and keep it with me, you know, that comes down to the personal customizing of how do you manage lists. You know, pretty much all you need is lists to keep all this stuff straight and out of your head. Uh-huh. They just need to be complete, they need to be current, and they need to be accessible to you if you need to add stuff to the list or if you need to refer to the list to keep yourself focused. So, first of all, in terms of the tools, you just need some good list manager. And then you have to decide, well, which list do I need to have with me when? For, you know, take a good example would be phone calls. Okay, well, here's all the calls I need to make. How could you keep track of that? Well, a low-tech way would be to keep just a file folder that said calls and just keep separate little scraps of paper in there for each call you need to make. Believe it or not, that's actually one of the fastest ways to actually manage the flow of work as simple folders with just pieces of paper that represent the work at hand. So that'd be one way to do it. That's not very portable, though. You'd have to schlep the folder around, and I know people that actually do that. They throw their calls folder in their briefcase when they're moving around and get to a phone. They pull out the folder and rummage through it and find the calls they want to make. A more portable way would be mid-tech, and that's to keep a loose-leaf organizer or loose-leaf notebook with a page in there that just says calls, and then you just have them listed as single line items on there. You know, I did that for 15 years, you know, with a paper planner, and I just carried a highlighter with me and highlighted them when they were done so you could glance at the page and see all the undone, unmade phone calls. They'd stick out, believe it or not, very easily. And then there's the high-tech way to do it, you know, the way I'm doing it now, which I'm using Lotus Notes, or you could use Outlook or any kind of a digital tool. You could use a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet or whatever just to make a list, and just so you could sort them so you can categorize all of the list items as calls, and you could pull up all the calls. So that's up to you. I mean, that, you know, the high-tech way obviously can then, you know, if you jump through those hoops and get it set up so that synchronizes to your PDA, PDA is a little smaller and a little easier to schlep around than, you know, a notebook or a file folder. However, the bad news is out of sight, out of mind. So as soon as you stick it in a PDA or a computer, you then must have the discipline to be able to go in and look at those lists, because it's a lot easier for paper to kind of be in your face and be there available to you than the digital forms. But any and all of those work if you work them. You know, but
they're just
neutral.
David.
They're just neutral tools. They don't do anything, as you know. You have to have the behavior to do them. And by the way, as soon as they're out of date and not complete, you won't trust them anyway, because your brain will still be keeping track of a bunch of stuff, and so it won't be worth even keeping them up. So that's the problem, is most people only half do their system, so it doesn't give them any kind of payoff, and it's a lot more work than the payoff.
And David, the payoff is peace of mind.
Yeah, well, the payoff is clarity. It says, hey, you know, here is every single call I need to make in my life that moves anything forward I'm committed to personally and professionally. That's a good feeling when you know those are all on a list, as opposed to, well, this is some of them, but there are probably others I need to do. Oh, damn. Mm. So it's, you know, you can call that clarity, you can call it freedom, you can call it whatever. You know, that's just basics. You know, if you really want to be able to stay focused appropriately. It's tough enough, even when you have all the data out there, to then make good intuitive judgments, but at least you can, that's a firmer ground to build on than incomplete systems that are still unclear.
So you have 20 calls that you need to make, or 10 calls, or whatever it is, and a couple of them are really important, and how do you, as you start to gather all of these different calls, and, I mean, you know, some of them are higher priority, how do you rate those?
Well, I don't in my system. I rate them moment to moment. In other words, there are times you should not be making those two most significant calls, right? You're not there. Your brain, you know, your body's there, but there's no light on your porch. You know, you either had too many beers, or you had not enough sleep, or you're toast. It's like, well, I'm sorry, that's not the time to pick up the phone and make a significant call.
Right.
Screw it up. You know, not only that, if you only have 10 minutes before you pick up your kids and their soccer game, you're not going to make a call that could be a 30-minute call. I'm sorry.
Right.
You need to make a call. Your highest priority then is something you can finish in 10 minutes. It doesn't take a lot of mental horsepower. Call Marriott and change a reservation. So that's why life changes so fast in terms of context, time, and energy available, you know, not to mention. mention, you know, all the different levels of priorities we have, family, you know, your health. You know, there's 20,000, 30,000, 40,000, and 50,000-foot horizons. The best you can do is make sure you're having enough of those conversations with yourself at those different horizons that you can then trust your gut, you know, in terms of as you shoot down the middle minute to minute out there. Mm-hmm. You don't have time to think, by the way, when you're out there in the real world. You need to have already thought. But most people haven't finished their thinking, nor have they accumulated the results in appropriate places, so they walk around thinking that they should be thinking, and they never actually finish the exercise. And that's an ulcer.
Very good. Who else? If anybody else has a question, you just hit your star 6 key. Again, we're talking with David Allen, the author of Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. And I'm on this end, I can generally see when people are unmuting, and I might do this also, is move into conversation mode or change the mode on this side. And then so everybody should be able to unmute at this point. David, while we're folks are thinking about a question, I do have one, and that is, and this came up through reading some of your material, and that is, are we... I struggle with this piece about how complex people make their lives. And I have a friend who owns a business, a furniture store, and he, in addition to that, he takes care of something like 15 dogs that he has rescued. These dogs just come into his life. And you can imagine the complexity that that adds, trips to the vet. It's an amazing thing that he's able to juggle all this stuff. And he tries to find homes for them and whatnot, but it adds a huge amount of complexity, and that's kind of a simplification. But, you know, having multiple houses or multiple jobs or, you know, your kids are going, some of them are things that are easier to control, like do you really need a 16th dog or even a pet at all? And being able to balance that with finding a system to manage how we've created such a complex life. Am I making sense?
Well, yeah, I think so. I mean, I think there are different issues. One is just the efficiency factor of keeping track of whatever you're committed to. And the more commitments you have, the more it'll challenge you to make sure you've got a good, complete, and intact system.
Mm-hmm.
The other issue is, have you overcreated, you know? I just gave up one of my big hobbies. I've been 2.5 years in bonsai plants, and I finally just said, you know, the payoff is not worth the attention that it's taking in terms of given what I'm doing. So I just mm-hmm. unhooked and gave it all back to my bonsai teacher. He loved it and gave it up. You know, so life's like that sometimes. You just got to make some of those judgment calls.
And how do you advise people to take a look at that part of their life?
You know, you need to pay attention to what has your attention. That's really what my new book is about. I mean, it's kind of embedded in the first book, but the you know, I think what people really don't realize is that you've got a messenger inside of yourself.
Hmm.
You said, well, look, there really is value to a clear head. So what's not clear? In other words, what's not on cruise control? See, everybody listening to this right now has a lot of important and strategic things that are not on their mind because... for some reason, they're on cruise control. They've made the decisions they need to make about it, or they trust that there's a systemic way that's managing whatever their commitment is. That's why it's not on their mind. So then you have to ask yourself, so what is on my mind, and why is that still on my mind? Ah, Grasshopper, that's because there are decisions about whatever that thing is you haven't made, or you haven't parked the results in some trusted place. So the idea is that as your head gets clearer and clearer, then you just start to pay attention to what is now got my attention. And, for instance, my bonsai hobby was starting to grab my attention too much. It was starting to take my, like, I've got attention. You know, I've got to go see it. I've now got a disease on one of the plants that might spread to the other plants, and I have to call my, and so I went, you know, it ain't worth it.
Is that because it became a burden for you? Because
yeah.
It seems like if you really love it, then your attention is drawn to that because you love that thing.
Well, you can put your attention on things, or your attention can be grabbed by things, right?
Okay.
You love your kids, so you can put your attention on your kids in a proactive, positive way, but at some point your kids are going to be a distraction called, why is this distraction happening?
Mm-hmm.
And you probably want to get that handled or on cruise control or resolved. So you want to actually get rid of your distractions so that you are free to put your attention on what you love. That's the whole point.
So the issue here was that your bonsai grabbed your attention?
Yeah. It was starting to grab my attention. I was trying to focus on other things. I was then being bothered by, you know, but I got a problem over here I got to fix. I got to make sure that's being handled. And in order to be able to handle it, it was taking too much of my attention. I said, I need my attention available for other things.
And yet you were attracted to the art of bonsai.
Oh, sure.
There was something there.
We're all attracted to all this stuff. I mean, come on, you wouldn't get engaged in any of this stuff if there weren't some level of attraction. And I still love it. It's still lovely stuff.
Yeah.
So it was a sacrifice. Same
okay.
thing with my sailboat. You know, it's one of those the two best days of a boat owner's life, you know, when you buy it and when you sell it. But, you know, I seem to have about a two-and-a-half-year cycle for my hobbies, but that's fun. You know,
yeah.
I've done tons of things in my life just because I had the attention on it. I put the attention on it. At a certain point, I had to go, you know, this is done. But understanding when things are done, there's some subtlety.
Tell us how you acquire the ability to know when it's done.
You know, I think that's just self-awareness and maturity. You know, when you start to work the GTD process, it makes it a little more obvious. It doesn't handle the issue, but it makes the issue more obvious. And it says, okay, I've done everything I can do. This is still bugging me, bothering me, still taking more of my attention than it deserves. Mm-hmm. So once you handle the efficiency factor, then sure, then you've got a qualitative decision about where do I want to put my focus now? Where should I put it? And, you know, that then comes back to, well, what's important to you? Let me give you a good example.
Okay.
Elder care for your parents.
Yes.
Okay. Big issue for a lot of people, certainly my age, between your age and my age,
mm-hmm.
right? And it's going to be a bigger one. So where do you draw the line? When are you done? What's your project there, by the way? What have you committed to finish about that? People go, well, they're my parents. Understood. You never finish relationships, but there probably is some level of project, some level of outcome, some level of implicit commitment that you've got to handle, deal with, or whatever. And that could just be, look, I need to get all the information about their options and give it to them, and then I'm done. Or I just need to get them in there, you know, on cruise control, kicking and screaming if required. Then I'm done. Hand it off to my sister, then I'm done. I don't know. There's some level of doneness that you need to clarify. But even so, you have to decide, okay, how much is enough time? Because some of you know, loved ones will take everything you give them and more. So you have to draw the edges. Call, where do I stop? Where do I start, you know, hurting other things in my life if I keep, you know, supporting and giving, you know, over in this area? I'm not saying these are easy issues. These are some of the toughest issues you've got.
Yeah.
But trying to make those judgment calls, where's the edge? Where's the edge with your kids where you go, wait a minute, I just need to leave them, you know, because they need to learn it on their own now as opposed to, you know, micro-meddling, you know, in their life. I mean, I don't want to get into all of that stuff because those are just life issues, just in terms of how well do you know yourself, what are your priorities, you know, and those are the kind of things GTD doesn't solve. But, again, it makes it a lot easier when you get rid of a lot of these other just sort of mundane stresses of life to then be able to then be able to focus on those things.
Hmm. I really get that it seems like you're clearing out space so that you can deal with things that are much more important and profound for you rather than a huge number of little tiny things that
sure,
or just take
fun.
Up.
You know, nothing wrong with just clearing out space so you can have fun. That may be some of the most important things you need to do.
Yeah, yeah.
If
well,
your kids never see you having fun, what are you teaching them, you know? You know, come on. So there's a lot of just about getting a clear space. Now, I have another saying that, you know, once you really pay attention to what has your attention, you'll find out what really has your attention, which when you then handle, you'll then find out what really has your attention, which when you handle, you'll find out what really has your attention. And by the
Killing
way, I think
onion.
That's why a lot of people unconsciously resist the getting things done process, because if you actually handle all that, then you'd actually have the bandwidth to actually address some things you just frankly don't feel like handling.
And what have you seen come up for people?
Oh, you name it.
I'm in the wrong job or wrong relationship.
Absolutely.
I'd imagine some pretty heavy-duty stuff.
Yeah, it's all kinds of stuff.
Yeah.
All kinds of stuff. I mean, I just, you know, not long ago, I just coached a very, very senior guy, and believe it or not, one of the first things he had to deal with was custody issues.
Custody, yeah.
Yeah, it was like, you know.
And he was, and that was on
he
hold?
He said, the horse is finished. I said, yes, it ain't finished yet. That there's still something not on cruise control. He said, yeah, no kidding. And he had about 6 or 8 projects just about that to try to get closure on it.
And he was not dealing with that effectively because of all of the other minutiae in his life?
He just didn't want to sit down and deal with any of it,
okay.
frankly. And when I say that, I mean, that's a little unfair. It's just the whole thing was just so overwhelming mm-hmm. that, you know, he didn't have the bandwidth to sit down and focus on it. As I say, those things are tough enough if you can hold the world back so you could just focus on each single item. And that's a lot of what I think GTD is about, is how do I get a pinpointed single focus, make the decisions I need to make instead of some big blur that then I'm going to resist and procrastinate about like crazy.
Right, right. Procrastination, that's a whole other area. So I want to take a moment and just encourage, is there anyone who would like to ask David a question about what we've covered or something that we haven't? About stress-free productivity or the getting things done process. Now is your opportunity. I can see a bunch of people there waiting in the wings, David.
Have I just been too intimidating? And at 63, I suppose I just, you know, cranky and direct is a little more fun. So,
well, it looks right. Like, who is unmuted?
This is May.
Yes, May, go ahead.
David, I struggle with a job that requires me to wear many hats at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And as I move, what happens is when I focus on a task, I often feel I often get these interruptions that call me to have to handle something in a different area. And it gives me sort of like a bouncing sort of back. I sense that I'm really losing a lot of time somehow changing hats or changing directions.
You may be. I mean, you know, sometimes those become, sometimes there is an efficiency issue there. This is if I keep shifting my focus, I can't focus on anything really well. And at the same time, sometimes if you get really good with being able to get placeholders for all of your stuff, you can shift a focus in just a second and hold, you know, 3 minutes of very intense, concentrated, free focus on something and then get a placeholder and shift right back to that thing. So that's to a large degree a lot of what the martial arts, you know, about my stuff really teaches. Like, how can you focus rapidly on something. Now, that said, there are times when you truly do need to get an hour or 2 hours of uninterrupted time so that some part of you can peel back the onion inside your head about projects or bigger things you need to think about and more creative kind of stuff. So, you know, then it becomes more critical to be able to then create brackets in your world so that I've got that kind of time set aside to be able to do that kind of thinking. But I hear you. I mean, that's a lot of what the big challenge is that, you know, people call it multitasking. It's actually not multitasking. Multitasking is what happens when you drive home and you wonder who drove. You know, like multiple things going on. But multitasking, what they really mean at work is rapid refocusing. You know, somebody, you're trying to work on something, somebody walks into your office, you get a corporate drive-by, and they go, it's like, what's this? You know, and now they want a piece of you and a piece of your attention. Well, you can get better and better with both how you navigate and negotiate politically those kind of things. But also, you know, if you've got a good in-basket that you trust and you've got a good note-taking device right in front of you, take a quick note, tear it off, throw it in your own in-basket, they walk out, you turn right back to what you did. You've got a placeholder for it. One of the biggest problems is most people don't trust their own systems to be able to take that input that comes in random form and be able to park it in their system. And so since you don't trust your own system for that, you'll then tend to run down those rabbit trails because you figure, well, you know you do have to handle it. That's probably the best way to handle it because it's in your face. But you feel like, wait a minute, but there really is something else I should be working on right now. Now, I don't know if that applies to you, but that's an educated guess for most people listening to this. That's one of the reasons interruptions feel so bad. It's not about the interruption. It's actually just new input. And there are cultures that, you know, support that more than others. For the most part, most people aren't doing, you know, are really somewhat in the Stone Age relative to how they manage all their commitments, agreements, and communications. And so the noise level has to go up so high in organizations just to be able to get communication through. So people are sending emails, then showing up in your office asking you if you got the email. Excuse me. You know, that's really silly.
Yeah.
So I don't know if that's the issue you're talking about as well. So did I hit it at all?
I think that's exactly it. I think my system for being interrupted and getting back. And I just began, since I've been in Tom's class here, I just started on getting things done, mm-hmm. and sort of kind of plowing through it, what I think you mean, do you know what I mean, and then
yeah.
trying it. And I am just learning to trust that system and haven't applied it in this way, like
right.
to my interruptions. But that's fantastic help right there.
Yeah, and by the way, it takes a couple of months sometimes for your brain to really let go. People say, gee, David, look, I wrote everything down, I made all those decisions, I made these lists, but this stuff is still on my mind. I say, well, how long have you done that? And they said, 3 days. I said, give yourself a couple of months, because your brain still doesn't trust that you'll look at it at the right time and that it's still complete. So you can fool me, but you can't fool your own mind. So you have to work the system enough so that some part of you can relax about it. If you think about this, by the way, the one thing that very few people, if anybody listening to this call, has been distracted on since they've been listening in this call is where you need to be a week from Thursday at 3:15. Guess why? That's the one system people trust, their calendar. Assuming you trust it, assuming you assume that, you know, that everything is on there that needs to be, and that you assume you'll look at your calendar at appropriate times, that's why it's not on your mind. You actually don't have to like where you're going to be a week from Thursday at 3:15, but you actually don't have to like your life to get it off your mind either. What you do have to do is you have to have a good system that you trust. You made all the right decisions and parked them in appropriate places and have the engagement behaviors, you know, habitual enough.
Great question, Meg. Very good. Thank you. And looks like there's another person who has a question. Is there one other person there who's unmuted? No. Okay. David, a question about and looking at this material, and for someone who's new to it, what is the biggest, or I'm sorry, not the biggest, the most common misunderstanding about productivity?
That it's about working harder.
You mean to become more productive, I'm just going to have to work harder.
Yeah. You know, and we've all heard smarter, not harder, but very few people really know exactly what that means or how to go implement that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, but I think that's the biggest thing. There's an old, you know, sort of gestalt theorem that you can never get enough of what you don't really need. And, you know, what you don't need is to work harder. and if you did, you could never get enough of it. In other words, you can never work hard enough. So if you're trying to get rid of your stress by staying late, you know, that's not going to happen. Yeah, sure, sometimes you got to just stick your shoulder to the wheel and, you know, and dig in and, you know, and put in a couple of all-nighters. Understood, I do too. But not as a sustainable sort of, you know, kind of a life or work style.
Mm.
So what you really need to do is to make sure you're looking at things from the right horizon. You know, you've got everything out of your head, and you're constantly sort of ranging and gazing at all of your commitments, having the appropriate conversations with yourself and other key people in your life so you trust your intuitive judgments, and then just make a good judgment call about what to do.
What is the impact of getting things done on an organization's culture? Have you... I'm guessing you have seen feedback in that area where if an entire organization, or a department starts to move in this direction and apply these methods.
Oh, that's huge. Huge.
What do people see? I guess there's I'm suspecting a bottom line.
Well, you move up the food chain. The animals move up the food chain as their nervous system gets more refined.
Mm-hmm.
So in an organization, your nervous system, if I can trust that I can drop a piece of paper in your in-basket and within 24 hours you're going to pick it up, look at it, make a decision about what it means, park it in some appropriate place so it's not lost, you just moved up the food chain. If you don't start a meeting without going, okay, how long do we have, what do we want to accomplish by what time, if you never end conversations with people in the hall or in a meeting without going, look, what's the next step on this? What do we decide? Who's got it? Is this yours or mine? And if everybody in the organization sat down once a week and looked at every single thing they call a project, more than one step they're committed to do, and bring up the rear guard and catch up with where they need to be about all of that, you know, come on. You know, it truly can change a culture. We've seen it.
And how does that happen? I mean, just kind of the mechanics. Let's say that someone listening to this says, well, you know, I personally like getting things done, and it works for me. How does an organization or a department say, okay, or someone comes in and says, I want to change the culture, how have you seen that work best?
Well, if they come up with a good solution, please let me know. That's what we're working on right now. I mean, truly, as we speak, I've got major, major global clients out there that are asking exactly that same question. We're asking ourselves that question and working to build support mechanisms for the process. We've seen it happen a lot of different ways, basically. The best way for it happen is the senior person or significant number of senior people that are highly visible and well-respected in the organization just start to do it. It goes through the culture fast. Because you can't legislate system. All you can really hold people accountable for is outcomes. But I had a friend of mine, the CEO of a mid-sized company, and as soon as he caught this, he got it. And he spent all weekend, cleaned up all his stuff, set up Outlook and manage all of his lists. And as soon as any one of his directs walked into his office, he pulled up from his Outlook list of all his waiting fors and all his agenda items for them, printed them out, had them in front of him there. And, man, they're all scurrying like crazy. What happened? Where's this book? And he didn't legislate anything. Mm. He just started to, go up the food chain himself in terms of the integrity with how he managed commitments and communications. Mm-hmm. And that just spreads around you. Now, if you're trying to do it and your boss doesn't get it, Ethan, I think, started out. I mean, come on, Ethan, you did a great job. Hi, buy 15 books, hand them out, and then nobody has any excuses then, at least because all the data is really in there.
Right.
People want to do it. But it really depends, and to a large degree, a lot of it depends on how hungry are the people in the culture for it. I just spent last week, I was at the FBI, and boy, those folks are toast. These guys are, I was in the cyber group that are doing, researching, child pornography on the web and trying to handle those cases, and they're falling behind. They fall in priority below the terrorist stuff that's going on. So these guys have caseloads that are just backed up on them like crazy. Mm. These guys are toast. But they were senior enough to have a huge span of responsibility, but not so senior that they can pretend they don't need this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I had 115 in a room, and boy, were they hungry for this. They just ate it up. Because they just hadn't seen the model like that before.
Right.
So, if you have a hungry enough culture where people really, really have significant reason to have a clearer head, to be able to have a more of a lifestyle, and get more done with less effort, then you've got a more fertile culture to install it in.
Yes, and I think that from a leadership standpoint, how do you get people hungry, that might be a separate topic, or hungry for this information or for any information. I received a question recently about just that. How do I make my team hungry? And,
I just have to say, to that end,
yes.
You just have to be doing it, enjoy doing it, be on the train and say, look, guys, hop on or not.
Mm.
The old leadership thing, you don't push spaghetti, you got to pull it, understood. So just start modeling this thing. Just start having these kind of behaviors. Start leaving work earlier and being able to manage and track a lot more and get more done. And people go, how you do that?
Mm.
maybe that's the behavior that wins, not the behavior that stays till midnight every night and then looks like you're toast and, you're complaining and, about all of your overwhelm. That's not exactly, going to have somebody want to jump on your ship.
Right, right. Well, we're getting to the top of the hour, and I want to make sure that we have all of our questions answered. I know that some people might hesitate and be intimidated because we have David Allen.
Please. I'm just
and,
a guy.
And yet, this is a huge opportunity. It looks like someone did just unmute. Go ahead.
Hi, this is Sarah in Minneapolis.
Hey, Sarah.
Hey, Tom and I were talking earlier, and my question was, is it better to wait for your new book to come out, or is your old book kind of your old book is something that corresponds with your new book, or is it best to have both books?
It's best to have both books. They were really the first one I haven't changed at all. I wouldn't, if I were to rewrite it, I'd just reprint. There's nothing has changed in there. I mean, that was 25 years worth of stuff, so that was pretty bulletproof when I wrote it down even then. What the new book is about is the more subtle levels of the application of it and more subtle understanding of the principles about why that book worked so well. Why did it hit a nerve? I mean, I truly did no marketing you know, at all, and it's in 30 languages and a million copies in print.
Wow.
So, you know, part of the story is, why is that a story? What happened?
Right.
What was it about these behaviors and this model that seemed to strike a nerve all the way across cultures, across, you know, organizations, you know, whatever? So that's part of – so it's really a good 1-2 punch. I mean, you can get all the information kind of in either book, but the first one is really the key tactical manual.
Okay.
The one that's coming out in December is called Making It All Work, Winning at the Game of Work and the Business of Life. Is really about, hey guys, this is a whole life and work style set of behaviors and why. So it's just a little, it takes it a little deeper.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Great question. Is there anyone else with a question before we let David go? All right. Well, David, if you could wrap up with us and by telling us, we've been talking a lot about getting things done, the book. And there's you have a lot of resources at your website, which is davidcoe.com.
Yep.
And for someone who wants information right now, what's the best thing to find on your website?
Well, let's see, information. First of all, that we do public seminars now. I do some called the Roadmap Seminar, and we also have senior staff doing the Mastering Workflow, the more tactical, and those are all on the web. You can find those under public seminars. There's overviews of the work that we do inside of organizations, you know, in the corporate part there, if people want to see that. A couple of things, by the way, we have a blog out there. It's kind of a blog. It's really an aggregator of a lot of writers around GTD called the GTD Times. So that's a free and easy way to just kind of surf around and see some of the better writers who are writing about this model, you know, from around the world.
And so how do we find that?
GTDtimes.com.
Okay.
You can just go on the web, take a look. Have a free newsletter you can plug in on the website and get that. So there's lots of ways to play. There's several free PDF files, articles that I've written if you go to the product section, you know, of our store. And we're doing a global summit, you know, next March 15 through 18 in San Francisco, sort of inviting the world, all the GTD players in the world. We're going to have 500 people come from around the world up at the Intercontinental, so that'll be fun.
Oh, wow, that sounds great. So, well,
all those ways to play.
Very good. This has been fantastic. I so appreciate your joining us. And again, for those, just to make sure that you understand who you've been listening to, it's David Allen, the author of Getting Things Done, The Art of Stress-Free Productivity. You can learn more about David and all his great work at www.davidco.com, davidco.com. And David, thanks again for being on the call with us.
Tom, my pleasure, sure.
All right. Well, look forward to talking with everybody soon.